You're listening to the Post-Apocalyptic Media Podcast, your weekly post-apocalyptic news roundup.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the 64th episode of the Post-Apocalyptic Media Podcast. I am your host, Sean, senior editor here at postapocalyptic.com, and I am joined today by a very special guest, Mr. Tim Watts, the creator of the Republic graphic novel. How you doing, Tim?
Doing fantastic, Sean. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, not a problem. I was made aware of this. As the date of we're recording this, it's still an upcoming Kickstarter, but when we release this episode, it will be live. And it's a brand new Kickstarter started for March, and it is all about this graphic novel book. That's something that you created, you wrote, you also inked it, right?
That is true. Originally, you know, I'd always been an artist most of my life, but I've always had a love of post-apocalyptic stuff. And and eventually I figured out that I had a story that I wanted to tell. So I decided to take a stab at writing it. And originally I wanted to write it and draw it and do everything. But then I discovered a couple things. One, I'm not that fast. And two, I wasn't quite good enough. and I loved the story so much. I wanted to make it as good as I could. So I made the decision to step aside and find somebody to do the penciling for me. And I'm very, very happy with how it turned out.
Yeah, I'm really impressed. You know, I was going through this, and the one thing that struck me, I think, the most, and I think people will find this, and this isn't anything to do with a spoiler for the story, but the kind of environmental drawing, you know, is incredible. I think I don't know, like when there's a scene of the Republic itself, or you know, a scene of like a buildings, you know, the ruins of a city. It's incredible. It's really, really well done. So, and this penciler's name is Alessandra Imperio, right?
Yes, she is actually an Italian artist that we've done this whole thing. You know, she penciled it and I inked it, and it was all done digitally through Dropbox because she's in Italy and I'm, you know, in California.
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and thank goodness for Google Earth, because not everyone may notice, people in Northern California may recognize, but I live in Sacramento and the book takes place in Sacramento. So, you know, like the Capitol building, that's the Capitol building in Sacramento since it's the capital of California. Yeah. And a couple other landmarks that you see in this story, like there's a bridge that plays a prominent part in the story. Those are all actual Sacramento landmarks. So Alessandra spent a lot of time on Google Earth getting to know the streets of Sacramento.
Oh, that's cool. That's really cool. Yeah. So, okay, go ahead and tell me and the listeners a little bit about what this story is about.
So one of the things that I really gravitate towards with this genre, and it comes from, you know, in years past, I used to co-host a podcast of my own that analyzed post-apocalyptic media. And over 100 plus episodes, I discovered that a lot of the stories that we watch in the movies that you see, people tend to fall into one of three main categories. One, when it comes to apocalyptic entertainment, you have the people that immediately try to rebuild what they lost and go back to the way things were. Mm-hmm. You have the people that kind of see this apocalyptic event as a clean slate or a reset, and they try to make something better for the future. And then you have the people that kind of can't really cope with what's going on. They just kind of lean into the chaos, and that's where you get, like, you know, the Mad Max Road Warrior type, you know, raiders, at, you know, Fallout raiders and things like that. And, you know, usually, and there's subgenres, but you can usually find people into one of those three main categories. And that really motivated me because I love how you can tell different stories all in the one genre that analyze how people react when you take away the social, take away the security blanket of civilization. Mm-hmm. You know, what do they do? And, you know, they fall into one of these three groups or something different. And I like exploring how people cope with, you know, not having a society.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. And so the big draw there is kind of, it's like you're saying, you know, and I've noticed this too, where there are, you know, there's certain aspects of post-apocalyptic that a lot of people draw themselves to. So having it, that part of it seems it seems very focused. It seems like something that you've probably had on your mind for a long time, getting this story out, right?
Oh, no, absolutely. And, you know, for example, there's different, you know, and your audience will know, different subgenres, you know, because I'm a huge Fallout fan. I've lost, I don't know how many hundreds of hours to that game. And I, you know, I love it, but my story is a little more quote unquote real world. You know, yeah. One of my favorite post-apocalyptic movies of all time is Book of Eli.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And the setting of that, because it's like a real world, you know, there's no mutants, there's no zombies, you know, as much as I love Walking Dead and all the other stuff, and it's great. My story that I wanted to tell, I wanted to focus on the human nature aspect of it. Just like Book of Eli, you know, he was focused on getting the Bible and controlling people. And he had a very human real world ambition and nothing to do with, you know, zombies or mutants or anything like that. And I like, you know, those kind of stories and wanted to tell that. You know, another one that I really love is Cormac McCarthy's The Road.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, that is, you know, my story is not quite as bleak as The Road. I love that book, but when I got done, I wanted to stick my head in an oven.
Yeah, yeah.
It is a brutal book, but so well done. And again, it looks at how do people react? How do they behave? How does, you know, the apocalypse affect people. And that's kind of stuff that I wanted to explore in my book.
So would you say that's kind of your main inspirations for the book itself?
Thematically, yeah, for sure. The Book of Eli is a big one. I like to describe this as like a post-apocalyptic Game of Thrones, but with hopefully a more satisfying ending.
Yeah.
Because it does have scale, you know. I kind of took the epic quality of a Game of Thrones type of thing and then tried to include some of the smaller, more intimate storytelling things like, you know, Walking Dead, you know, how they focus on individual people and they tell very personal stories. And I tried to, you know, do a little bit of both of that in this book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see Game of Thrones. I could see Well, try not to spoil anything.
Right.
It's like there are parts of it that also kind of remind me of the Galactic Empire parts of Star Wars, you know, where there's you know what I mean? Like those parts where they're talking about the governments, you know?
Right.
And there's a big part of that kind of, especially toward the beginning, the middle.
Right. And I think I can explain it without spoiling it this way. And you know, I appreciate you being careful because yeah. I want everyone to enjoy it.
Yeah.
But the basis of the story is you have one group of people who have settled in the remains of a large city. And over the decades, they have gradually gone from just surviving the night to rebuilding a little bit of shelter, and then they can grow some food, and they you know meet some more people. And over several decades, they created a you know somewhat stable for the apocalypse city. And they become, by the time the story starts, they've become a regional power in the area, and they're one of the you know largest you know cities or towns in the area, you know, of the country. Mm-hmm. And then they find out that there is another group that we refer to as the Southern Tribes that is moving into their area. And this is a group that either reputation precedes them, you know, it's, you know, they're the barbarians, they're the, you know, the boogeymen, they're, you know, that's the thing that everyone is afraid of. Mm-hmm. So they don't know if those rumors are going to be true or not. They don't know if these people will actually show up or not. And, you know, small spoiler, they do show up. And I look at it as a conflict of ideologies, because one group takes the approach of trying not necessarily to rebuild past society, just create something that is stable and safe and that people can just kind of live their lives. And the other group has a more pragmatic, do what you need to do to survive approach. And one of the discussions I love having about post-apocalyptic media is how do morals apply? You know, when there is no society anymore and, you know, you and I are standing facing each other and I have, you know, let's say a family that I need to feed and you have food. And if I kill you and take your food and I feed my family, you know, is that good or bad? Is it wrong? Is it immoral? You know, and how does that change, you know, from our current society to not having a society, and that's the kind of stuff that I like.
Yeah, I could see that. And one thing I found interesting too, I'd like to know about this, is you have it set centuries into the future, and they mentioned generations. What made you want to do that far ahead versus maybe a little bit closer to the apocalypse?
Yeah, and this is why I'm glad that I get to do your show, because we talk about these things that on a straight comic book podcast people don't necessarily get into. So this is great, and that was a very intentional choice, because I wanted to be far enough removed that nobody alive currently remembers even anything about the world before. Even you know, not even a grandparent could tell them it was like this when I was a kid. I wanted to have the world that we're in be the only world that the characters knew. And also, I wanted to, a small part of the book is that literacy is not completely gone, but it almost is. There's a few people that know a little bit, like a very low, like fourth or fifth grade reading level thing, kind of a sort of thing. And there's the remains of a library in Sacramento that they are kind of fishing through, trying to find out, you know, what the time before knew, or, you know, and dig up, you know, whatever books survived that weren't burnt for fuel or whatever, and try to re-educate themselves a little bit. You know, it's light, and there's a little bit of a, not an, an analogy is not the right word, but exploration of, okay, if you go digging around to find out what happened before, are you going to repeat, you know, those that forget history are doomed to repeat it, kind of a thing. So that's another aspect of it. But I like in the post-apocalyptic movies where people will like pick up an object from the past and they misinterpret what it means. And because you see that a lot in post-apocalyptic stories, you know, they'll pick up a, you know, I don't know, a toy car or a train or a water pistol or something, and they have no idea what it is or how it works. And I like that openness of misinterpreting things. You know, for example, the title of the book, The Republic, I kind of paralleled a little bit of ancient Roman history, because I'm also a bit of a history nerd. So ancient Rome started out as a monarchy with kings, and then eventually became a republic, you know, got rid of the kings. Well, Sacramento has an NBA team called the Kings, and they also have a professional soccer team called the Republic. So I kind of took some local history, and I weaved it into the story itself. And, you know, this idea of republic, or, you know, like a representative government, you know, they kind of stumbled across a couple, like, you know, I picture like a junior high or elementary school civics book that describes government, and they think, oh, republic, that sounds like a neat idea because people are equal. We'll call ourselves that, you know, that kind of thing. So I like them discovering bits and pieces of the past.
Yeah, that's cool. And you know what I was really interested in? I'm kind of a car buff. And so when I see frame or bodies of cars on like a wagon, you know, type of frame and the wagon wheels and used as a battering ram, that is incredible to me. And I just really loved those, that kind of imagery where so a lot of it is very tribal. You know, a lot of the people are dressed very tribal, especially in the, like you said, the Southern tribe. But then they're also bringing like these old hulls of cars, and they're using those as weapons or using them as wagons. And that is cool to me, because it's like a mix. It's not only just cars. It's a mix of, like, you know, the Roman, like you said, the Roman battering rams mixed with a car. So cool.
Yeah. And that was a little nod to one of my big pet peeves with post-apocalyptic movies and shows, is that, you know, and being a car guy, you'll understand this. When they show people driving around in cars like 10 years after the apocalypse, not knowing that gas goes inert after about 6 or 9 months.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, okay, where do you have the oil refinery that you're filling up your tank?
So
that was kind of the thing. You know, I was talking to the artist. I'm like, yeah, go ahead and include these. But, you know, everything's getting pulled by an animal. Nobody's driving anything.
Yeah, because, yeah, it's like you said, you can't, the gas wouldn't work. I mean, a lot of people argue that, especially with Mad Max, they're like, you know, if the gas is there, it's going to be ruined. And to make new gas, it's going to be insanely expensive. And they're driving V8s around. They're just driving, you know, getting 6 miles to the gallon. How are they doing this? But it was always written off, well, it's a fantasy. You know, it's a fantasy world. But still, it bothers some people. You know, some people look at it and they're like, yeah, but but right. I don't know. So
well,
yeah,
like, okay. You know, like in Road Warrior back in the 80s, which was one of the first post-apocalyptic anything that I saw, they actually had a oil refinery. So yeah, that was that was easy to explain of, okay, they're making new gas so we can do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I totally agree.
Yeah, I mean, if I was running a oil refinery and it was like the only one, and then this guy comes up and he wants to drive his, you know, last of the V8s, I'd be like, look, we'd have to run this refinery all day just for you to floor it, you know, for...
exactly. So, yeah.
Yeah, so I love that about it. I love the whole... I mean, the art style's great. The story's great. I'm really excited about this. So let's talk about the Kickstarter itself.
Okay.
So you have... you have the Kickstarter going, starting on Tuesday, and then you have an endorsement that I saw in the little trailer. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, I got very lucky that a couple years ago, I got to meet Kevin Smith, film director that most people probably know. Mm-hmm. And he came through town with the last Jay and Silent Bob movie that he was doing. He was touring it, and he came to Sacramento. And when I went down, I decided to splurge and get the meet and greet part of the, you know, package that you could get. Mm-hmm. So I got to talk to him, and I took down the first part of the book, because originally the book was going to be a 4-issue miniseries that I was going to try to get a publisher and go through the normal comic shop route. Mm-hmm. But when the pandemic happened and everything changed, I kind of decided to repackage it as a single volume and go Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. So I had the first part of the book with me, and when I met him, and this is, you know, God's honest truth, the only thing I wanted to do was tell him, hey, you're always encouraging people to make your own thing. You know, if I can do it, you can do it. And I just wanted to tell him, hey, thanks for the motivation. You know, here's a example of what I made. So I got to meet him, and, you know, super nice guy. And we talked for a minute, and I showed him the book and said, yeah, you know, I made this thing. It's really cool. Thanks for the motivation. And he just looked at me and said, how can I help? And I was like, what? So email back and forth, long story short, I got a little short video of him saying, yeah, I met Tim and he showed me his book and please support the Kickstarter and help him out. And he was very cool about it. And I appreciated it a lot.
Wow. That's really cool.
Yeah.
I mean, you could have finished off the book with like the craziest stuff ever. And he's saying he endorses it. So for him to endorse it like that and say, you know, support this Kickstarter, it's pretty good. And but like you said, he seems like an incredible guy who's especially into this whole culture, you know. He's not just like a face, you know.
Oh no, absolutely not. Yeah. And he's also a big believer of, hey, it, you know, I'm just this guy that I, you know, that got, you know, I mean, he works hard obviously, but he's, you know, he's very fortunate that he got to make a living out of doing this, and if you want to do something, you should try to do it, you know. So yeah, it was very, very cool, and I appreciate him doing that.
Yeah, definitely cool. Okay, so the Kickstarter stuff, I don't know, can you talk a little bit about maybe some of the levels, the different levels that will be in?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So obviously, you know, nowadays it's standard to have a digital version. So if you want to go that route, you can just get a PDF of the book. We also have a regular soft cover version of the book. And just a quick aside, I know a lot of Kickstarters will do the promotion and to fund the ability to make the book. My book is already done, beginning to end, so nobody will have to wait months and months to get the book and follow updates of we're almost done drawing it, or anything like that. When the Kickstarter is over, all I need to do is get a hold of the printer and tell them, here's how many you need to print. Hmm. So it'll get in people's hands faster. So I wanna make sure everyone's aware of that. So we have a soft cover version that people can get. We also have the printer that I'm working with does a hardcover. So if you want something nice that you can put on your shelf, that's a little, you know, higher upscale, you can do that, which is very cool. Mm-hmm. We have a number of extra benefits. You know, I found a place that does drink coasters. So we're going to do some Republic drink coasters that are pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And also, because the book originally was going to be a 4-issue miniseries, my penciler did wraparound covers for all 4 issues. And when I repackaged it into a single volume, I repurposed those covers to the chapter dividers that you saw. But when I did that, you only saw the front half of the art. You didn't see the back half of all those wraparounds. Mm-hmm. So one of the rewards we have includes the art prints of the full image of all 4 of those covers. So you can see the beautiful artwork that she did and everyone can appreciate that. Also, the cover of the book, I got a separate artist to pencil the cover for me, a gentleman named Chuck Boykevich, who actually He worked on Justice League back in the 90s and early 2000s. Hmm. He also worked for an animation studio called Blur. I don't know if you remember back when the leaked Deadpool footage that Ryan Reynolds said got, you know, leaked to the press that helped get the movie made. That was from Blur Studios, where Chuck worked. So I've known him for a long time. So he very generously offered to pencil the cover. And one of the other rewards that we have is going to be like a mini poster, you know, larger than the book itself, but a mini poster of his artwork with no lettering or no anything on it, just, you know, the amazing image that he did. So that's going to be one of the rewards. Cool. And we have a couple other things that, you know, are going to be available. You know, and if you want to go for like the higher VIP level, we have things like associate producer or executive, that's not the exact name of them, but you get your name in the back of the book with a heading of, you know, of higher donors, kind of a thank you page type of thing. Mm-hmm. And so those are, they're still ironing out one or two. I'm hoping that there's one or two other rewards that we can do, but we're, you know, doing some sourcing and pricing to see if it's feasible to do, but that's the majority of what we have.
Yeah. And you probably, like you said, you have plans for more, but I'm sure stretch goals are in mind.
Yeah. Some of the things that I mentioned might be a stretch goal. They might be a regular reward level. We're still trying to figure that out. I think the poster is going to be a stretch goal because that's a more expensive item. And, you know, at one stretch goal might be, you know, me going through and depending on how many we get, you know, signing all of them as a, hey, we, like, you know, we hit our goal, you know, I sign all the books now, or, you know, still kick around ideas. And, and if, you know, we blow through the goal and the first, you know, the first stretch or second stretch, you know, I'm, you know, more than happy to try to come up with more stretch goals. It'd be a great problem to have.
Yeah. It's always, I'm always fascinated by these, and it seems like post-apocalyptic stuff. You know, I've been doing this Kickstarter roundup every month. And I'm always amazed to see that this post-apocalyptic stuff is just blowing everything else away. There's these, you know, especially like board games and comics and stuff like that lately have just been killing it on Kickstarter, which is, you know, it's always good news for all of us, right?
I hope I follow the trend.
Yeah. One thing I was curious about too is we talked about Alessandra, but we didn't talk about like the colorist Michael Woods. I'm curious to know how you got together with the rest of them. You mentioned a couple of them already, but like Michael Woods, and then it says letterer Kurt Hathaway. How did you get together with all these guys?
Yeah. So Alessandra and Michael were through Facebook groups for comic creators. You know, there's a number of groups of people that are artists and writers, and they kind of come together and they show samples of their work and they kind of connect of, hey, I'm looking for somebody to do this. And so that's how I came across Alessandra and Michael. And Michael's done a fantastic job on the coloring. Mm-hmm. I don't want to give anything away, but at the end of the book, there's a scene that was made more dramatic just because of the color recommendations that Michael made that were not in the original script. He says, hey, I think it would look good if we did this. And it was a great idea and it works. And, cool. You know, when you get there, you'll probably understand what it is. And then Kurt was actually the owner of the local comic book shop that I go to, also has self-published a few comics of his own. And he had used Kurt to letter some of his things. And also as well, I found out about Kurt online. And so that's how, you know, I got connected with him.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm always curious about that stuff, especially if there are people out there who want to, you know, make their own comics. And I think it's so fascinating that nowadays you can, you know, join a Facebook group. Like you said, it's really cool.
Yeah, and some of the groups are, you know, they have hundreds of members, if not more than that. And these are, you know, all people that are at, you know, obviously varying levels of skill but that's a good thing because it depends on what your budget is, know, what you can do. So you know, I'm not Marvel or DC. I can't afford, you know, those guys, but I, you know, will be eternally grateful that I found Alessandra because she did such an amazing job. I was very lucky to be able to work with her.
Yeah, I agree. It's very, very impressive stuff. Well, what kind of, we talked about some of the movies that inspired you. What about comics?
With comics, not as much on the post-apocalyptic, although way back in the day, since I'm an older guy, Dark Horse did a book called, I want to say Black, I think it was Black Cross, not Black Flag, that's the band. Mm-hmm. I think it was Black Cross by a guy named Chris Warner. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the lone guy, it was in the 80s, late 80s. So it was, kind of like the Mad Max lone guy wandering the wasteland type of thing.
Yeah.
And so I always liked that. But as far as what entertainment from the genre really motivated me, as I mentioned before, I came across The Road Warrior, the Mel Gibson early 80s movie, and also about the same time, I came across a role-playing game. And most people's role-playing experiences, they first play Dungeons & Dragons. That's what everyone says.
Yeah.
But a lot of people don't remember that about the same time or shortly after Dungeons & Dragons, TSR also put out a game called Gamma World.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that was the first role-playing game I ever came across was TSR's post-apocalyptic Gamma World, which I thought was a blast and I loved it. And in those two things, Road Warrior and Gamma World hit me at about the same time, like junior high level. Mm-hmm. And that got me going of, hey, this stuff is super cool. And I've loved it ever since.
Yeah, that's cool. I forgot about Gamma World, man.
Oh, yeah.
I was into AD&D back then, and back when they called it that, and Shadowrun, of course, was huge, and Warhammer, but I never played Gamma World, and I guess it's just because my friends didn't, It's like you play whatever your friends play, but
exactly.
But, yeah.
But it was great. I still remember the first module we did was called Legion of Gold. I remember that. And a buddy of mine told me that there's a website, I think it's called DriveThruRPG, that has a lot of TSR stuff on it that you can get, like PDFs of the Gamma World stuff on it.
Oh, wow. That's cool. I need to check that out. Very cool. Well, so let's talk about things that maybe, we talk about the past. What about like present stuff? What are you into now as far as, are there any shows or movies or anything that kind of really have grabbed you lately?
Lately, I mean, I'm still watching Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. Because I'm kind of a completist and I want to see how they finish it.
Yeah.
It's not a bad show, but after 10 years, you kind of get used to seeing the same kind of things and it's hard. It's hard to keep it going for that long and keep it fresh.
Yeah.
And I think they've done an admirable job, but it's not the same show that it was to begin with.
Oh no. Yeah.
Now, the show ended a couple years ago, but I don't know if you ever watched The 100 on CW.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was one show that I never would have watched if I hadn't been hosting a podcast about the medium, because it was a CW show, and I immediately assumed, oh, it's going to be a bunch of pretty teenagers, and it's not going to be my thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's CW. There was a bunch of pretty teenagers.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they told some really good stories, and for a network level show, they did some brutal stuff.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And I was very impressed. I still, being the critic, nitpicked some of the things like, okay, if they dropped a bunch of nuclear bombs, it wouldn't be radioactive for 100 years. It doesn't work that way. We dropped an atomic bomb on Japan, and within 5 years, they had rebuilt the city and people were living there. Mm-hmm. Airborne radiation dissipates, so it wouldn't be 100 years, but okay, whatever. But so there's some storytelling things that I can't help but nitpick, because that's how my brain works.
Yeah.
But I still enjoy the show a lot. But right now, there's not a ton of post-apocalyptic, although actually HBO Max, I forgot, I don't know if you've watched Station 11.
Oh yeah, love that show.
That is right in my wheelhouse of, there's no mutants, there's no crazy stuff. Mm-hmm. It's just examining how people behave. They took a very different approach, and they did it more, people that actually remember the end of the world and this immediate aftermath, which is a genre all its own. But I thought they did a fantastic job with that show, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I love that show. I've actually recommended it to a lot of my friends, and they checked it out, and they're like, you know what? That was a really refreshing show. It wasn't over the top. It was very realistic. It was a very, very, very well told story that kind of tied together toward the end. It was really great. Yeah, it was kind of like a sleeper hit, I think. It was was great.
Yeah, it's weird. I saw little pockets of people that were just insanely devoted to it and screaming how great it was, but it was a small group over on one side, and it didn't really penetrate out the rest of the viewing audience like something like, you know, Peacemaker or something.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I speaking of HBO Max, you know, I got that for Dune back in October, and then I got caught up in Raised by Wolves, which I absolutely loved, and then I watched Station 11. Did you watch Raised by Wolves?
I watched the first season of Raised by Wolves. Yeah. I've not gotten around to the second one. I thought it was well done. It was interesting. But it didn't grab me as much as some of the other stuff, because while it has some of the visual trappings of apocalyptic stuff, it's more sci-fi, you know,
yeah,
landing on a new planet, create a new whatever, you know, type of thing, where it doesn't have all the same bits and pieces of the apocalyptic stuff that I like, but it's a cool show. But there's a lot of stuff out there that I watch, and sometimes things fall through the cracks.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's kind of a polar opposite of Station 11, which is very realistic, and this is very unrealistic. You know, it's very Isaac Asimov and just,
yeah,
you know, way out there. I really liked it. I haven't seen season two either, but yeah, it's. I was kind of impressed with just HBO Max, you know, as a whole, with these two shows, especially with what they've done. And there were a couple other ones that I really enjoyed recently. Did you see Apple's C?
I have not seen that. I don't have Apple. I kind of got to the point where I was hitting, you know, streaming subscription overload.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, like, I got HBO Max when they announced that they were going to do all their theatrical releases online. I thought, okay, I'll buy it for a year.
Yeah.
But like you, I was pretty impressed. They have a lot of good stuff on there, and I've hung on to it because they're doing some good stuff.
Yeah.
I haven't seen C. It. I'm curious. I don't want to judge it without seeing it, but I'm kind of curious about the premise of everybody's blind and how everything functions. I'm curious how they tackle that topic.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen it yet. No.
I'd recommend it. It's really good. And not to give any spoilers, but there are exceptions to the everyone can't see thing.
Oh, interesting. So, okay.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a really great show. I especially love the visuals, which is ironic, I guess. But the costumes are amazing. It's just, yeah, it's a really well done. And you know, you were talking about Game of Thrones earlier, and I see C as a very Game of Thrones-esque, you know, kind of a show. So it's, if you're into that, yeah, it's pretty good.
Well, that's a good endorsement, as long as it's not season 8 Game of Thrones similar.
No. All right. Well, I think that's good. So again, we have the Kickstarter starting when this comes out and everyone's hearing this, and you'll be running it for a month, right?
Actually, this one's going for 3 weeks.
Okay, 3 weeks.
Yeah, it's 3 weeks. And to make it easy for people, instead of, like, you know, going to Kickstarter and searching and trying to find it, you can just go to therepublicnovel.com.
Okay.
And it will redirect you to the campaign page, and it's easy as that.
Very cool. Yeah, and I'll have links to it in the show notes for this podcast also. And I'll probably put it in the roundup too, well, when I do the Kickstarter roundup for March also. So very cool. I'm excited about it. I'm excited to see how this goes. If you get insanely rich, just remember that I talked to you first. Just remember that.
Absolutely. Yeah, when I sell it to Netflix, I'll make sure and we'll sit down and have another conversation.
Yeah. Then I'll be getting you like you did with Kevin Smith, and I'll be like, hey, remember me?
Right. Sounds good.
All right. Well, I want to thank you again for coming on the show. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Make sure you check us out on social media. We're on just about everything. And check us out at postapocalyptic.com. And once again, everyone, thanks for listening. And stay alive out there, and always be ready for the big one. Bye-bye.